Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Bahalaba Giravarirha Hari. Gopi Janna Bahalaba Giravarirha Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Rajagachara Sotera Sadashi Shivan Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nath Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namachari Shri Das Thakur Ki Jai. All glorious to simple devotees, all glorious to simple devotees, all glorious to simple devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Granga Haribo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamal Arjuna Trees, Text 14. Okay. Yatakatanka vidhango jantor nech jatitam vyatam jiva samyam gato lingayar na tata virakantaka yatha kantanka vidhango jantor nechatitam vyatam jiva samyam gato lingayar na tatha vidhakantaka yatha kantaka vidhango jantor nech chatitam vyatam jiva samyam gato lingayar na tatha vidhakantaka. Satitam Yatam. Ladies. Antakavibhango. Yata, just as, Kantaka Vidha Anga, a person whose body has been pinpricked, Janto, of such an animal, Na, not, Ichchati, desires, Tam, a particular, Vyatam, pain, Jiva Samyam Gata, when he understands that the position is the same for everyone. Lingai, by possessing a particular type of body. Na, not. Tata, so. Avidha Kantaka, a person who has not been pinpricked. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. By seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pains of others who have been pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. Purport. There is a saying, the happiness of wealth is enjoyable by a person who has tasted the distress of poverty. There's also another common saying, Vandya ki bujbe prasava vedana. A woman who has not given birth to a child cannot understand the pain of childbirth. Unless one comes to the platform of actual experience, one cannot realize what is pain and what is happiness in this material world. The laws of nature act accordingly. If one has killed an animal, one must be killed by that same animal. This is called mamsa. Mam means me, and sa means he. As I am eating an animal, that animal have the opportunity to eat me. In every state, therefore, it is ordinary the custom that if a person commits murder, he is hanged. Translation again. By seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. Om Jnanatam Randasya Gnajana Salakaya Chakshunamitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchukalpatyubhischa Kripasindhubhivacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. There's a concept in psychology and counseling called empathy. A very common word most of us have heard. And one definition of empathy is the identification with or vicarious experiencing of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another. So this is something that we probably have heard about and probably have experienced ourselves, that one might be have some understanding or some feeling about how another is feeling or how another is thinking or how another is experiencing the world. Interestingly, the Srimad Bhagavatam verse and Srila Prabhupada's purport give almost a classic spiritual definition of this principle and really explain it very, very nicely. So many of these principles that we think are modern principles, this word empathy actually didn't even come into the English language till about 1900 with some of the early psychologists, but it's actually obviously the principle and concept have been in existence for thousands and thousands of years, in fact, eternally. So we see that there's so much depth of understanding in so many areas of knowledge within the Vedic literature and specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I want to talk a little bit about this concept of empathy that has been described here in the Bhagavatam and extending that a little bit further to another concept which isn't specifically mentioned but is implied within the verse and purport, and that's one of compassion and how these two concepts relate with one another. So what is compassion? Well, specifically when we talk about Vaishnava compassion, we're talking about something that's a little deeper than empathy because it not only implies that one understands the suffering of others, but one wants to alleviate that suffering. One wants to do something about it out of the understanding of the pain and the suffering that others are experiencing. I thought it was interesting in looking closely at this verse in purport, there's really two different aspects of this concept of empathy that are being described. One is that we experience pain ourselves, and then we're able to understand that by understanding the commonality of all experiences. The verse describes, realizing this pain is the same for everyone, one does not want to see others suffer in this way. In other words, I'm experiencing a certain pain or suffering due to certain causes, therefore I can understand there's a commonality of experience among living entities, particularly amongst human beings. So if this is causing pain to me, certainly it'll cause pain to others. So that's another aspect that's being mentioned here, that not only does one realize the pain based upon one's own experience, but one understands the commonality of that experience and how that will also affect others in the same way. Then there's a second aspect that's being described here that's a little more subtle, and that is that simply by seeing the pain of others, one may also have empathy for them and understand that suffering. In other words, one does not necessarily have to experience it oneself, but one can understand through understanding the experiences of others. This is mentioned in the first part of the translation where Srila Prabhupada says, by seeing their faces, one can understand the suffering of others. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I didn't really see that specifically in the word for word or in the translations, this idea of simply experiencing by seeing another's face. And so I was kind of looking into this and thinking about this, and I noticed that it's actually has to do with the word lingai that's mentioned here. My technology goes out on me here. When I need it, of course. In the purport to this particular verse by Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, he elaborates a little bit more on the principle that Srila Prabhupada has picked up on here on this word lingai. And that lingai is also translated by Vishwanath as what is it? Okay, I'll find it here. Realizing the pain, it's... It implies that one is seeing the symptoms. In other words, the word is translated sometimes as symptoms in another's body. So Vishwanath says, by seeing the symptoms, lingai, of one in pain, such as the withering of the face or having experienced it oneself, one understands the nature of pain and thereby sympathizes with anyone experiencing pain. So in other words, this word lingai means that one might see it at the symptom of pain in another, or one might experience it oneself. So either way, naturally one is going to feel this empathy or compassion for the living entities. So the first part of this definition or this aspect of experiencing the pain oneself is given by actually three examples in the verse and purport. The example from the verse is that one is a very simple one that everyone can understand. If you are pricked by a pin, then you will understand that pain, and you will understand that if I prick someone else with a pain, they are going to experience the same reaction or the same response. So this is obviously a very deliberate, simple explanation that everybody can get. If something is causing you pain, naturally it's going to cause pain to others, and therefore the implication is you would not cause pain in the same way to others. And Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this principle in the purport by talking about killing of animals. This was naturally flows from this. If you, in other words, you would not want to be killed yourself, or you would experience the pain and suffering if you were killed and eaten. Naturally, then, you would not want to inflict this on other living entities, including animals. So that's the example that's given in the verse. And Srila Prabhupada gives two other examples. First, he gives the example of wealth and poverty, and then he gives the example of childbirth. And the saying that he gives, I'm not sure where the saying is from, that the happiness of wealth is enjoyable by a person who has tasted the distress of poverty. So this is something that we very practically see. Often people who are born into wealth or who have never been poor do not have so much sympathy for those who have less than them. It's almost like this is my divine right. Of course, they do have, you know, karmically, they are entitled to what they've been given in this lifetime. But because one has received some opulence in this lifetime does not mean that he has no responsibility for others. But someone who has always had wealth, had opulence, or had all the advantages often is not sympathetic to others. They think, well, I have this, and you know, if others don't have it, there must be something they did or their problem, or they just don't really feel what that's like because they do not have that direct experience and do not have the sufficient intellectual, spiritual, or emotional capacity to understand how that might affect others. But the other aspect is one who has been poor, and as Srila Prabhupada is saying, the saying says one can actually appreciate wealth because they have been poor and now they're in a more advantaged situation. And so we also see this example that sometimes people who started from very humble beginnings and they become wealthy, they have a little more empathy or sympathy or compassion for others who do not have the same advantages that they have. I was actually thinking about one very good example. That's a mundane example, but still, it's a good example of this principle of Andrew Carnegie. You know, he was a very, very wealthy industrialist. He formed U.S. Steel back around the turn of the century, late 1800s, early 1900s, and he was actually the second wealthiest person ever in America after Rockefeller. And he actually was a Scottish immigrant who came practically with nothing, and he started out as a factory worker. And as a factory worker, then he worked his way up and invested, and finally he created all this wealth. And he sold out everything, you know, towards the end of his life, and he was worth, because he sold everything for $400 million, and they said that's equivalent to about $5 billion today. And then what did he do? He proceeded to give it all away. And even still, you see, sometimes in small towns, and if any of you saw this, you know, where I used to live in DeKalb, Illinois, we had the Carnegie Library. You know, in other words, he established libraries all over, and he did many, many things in charitable works, and he formed pension funds for workers. And he really had this concept that if one has wealth, then one should use that for others, for welfare work for others. In fact, he said, if one dies with wealth, with riches, he said, then his life is more or less useless. You know, in other words, he said it's a disgrace that if one simply hoards one's wealth and doesn't give it away. So a little bit of motive goodness there, perhaps, or at least a little bit of understanding of the plight of others and how we should try to help others. And I think we can see that some of it at least had to do with the fact that he also was very poor and he had struggled, and so he did have a little more understanding of the pain and suffering of others. Of course, there is a higher understanding. That's sort of a material understanding of the principle. Actually, Andrew Carnegie was not particularly religious. This is really sort of a sub-religious principle, we call them, you know, sort of in the mode of goodness to give in charity, but it may or may not have any real spiritual basis or spiritual foundation. So if one has a strong spiritual foundation, understands Krishna consciousness, then one might be elevated to a little higher understanding or perspective of spiritual compassion. Now, how does that differ? We could say that compassion means not only understanding the pain and suffering of others, but also the idea is that one wants to try to alleviate that pain and suffering. And we can see that in our Vaishnav history and our acharyas, we have so many wonderful examples of great devotees who have exhibited this principle. So most people can understand the idea of empathy. Normal people can see that, well, if something is causing me pain, then I also should not cause that pain to others. Of course, certain people are not able to do this. I think Nagaraj mentioned a couple days ago in class that there are those personalities who seem devoid of this quality. Technically, it's called an antisocial personality disorder. It's a type of personality disorder where one actually cannot feel for another. It's incapable of taking the perspective of another and seeing how they may be suffering. Now, this is, of course, unusual. In fact, it is a personality disorder. In other words, the average normal person has some capacity. And we see that this is a developmental aspect. Even young children begin to be able to take the perspective of others at a certain point. I'm not a very small child. A baby will not. But at a certain point, they're able to have feelings for others and want, they call this pro-social behavior or the development of empathy, and to try to develop these qualities. But the difficulty is that even if one has a highly developed sense of empathy and it has a sense of feeling for the suffering of others, in most cases, they don't really know what to do with that. It's one thing to have some general good feeling. Yeah, I'd like to help others. But how do we help others? And that's the difference between spiritual knowledge and mundane knowledge. With spiritual knowledge, one has the process, has the way. We understand how one can alleviate suffering to others. Because, you know, even if Andrew Carnegie built a nice library so that working class kids could have books to read, is that going to eliminate all the suffering in their life? No. And will it eliminate suffering in their next life? No. And will it free them from the cycle of birth and death? No. Only spiritual knowledge can do that. So spiritual compassion is not only based upon a feeling, an emotion or a feeling of compassion for others or sympathy or empathy for others, but it's also based upon knowledge of how to alleviate that suffering. And so we see that so many great devotees in our Vaishnava line have exemplified this because they understand the root source of suffering. They understand that suffering is caused by forgetfulness of Krishna, that we are in this material world trying to enjoy independently of Krishna, that we're trying to simply gratify the senses, the material senses, rather than trying to gratify the spiritual senses of the Lord, and thus automatically our spiritual senses will also be satisfied. And that's a much higher principle. And the principle of giving everything, offering everything to the service, to the lotus feet of Krishna, this is something that's fairly rare because people don't understand that that alone will alleviate the suffering of this material world. So we may try in so many ways through charity and through philanthropy and different good works we may do, but it doesn't really get to the root cause. So we know from the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of many small ponds are served by great reservoirs of water. Prabhupada would say if you have $1 million, all your $10 problems are solved, or $100 problems are solved. So we know that if one understands one relationship with Krishna and becomes reestablished in that relationship with Krishna, then all one's problems of life are ended. And the real suffering, the real pain that we experience by countless repetitions of the cycle of birth and death, of taking material bodies and experiencing the sufferings of material and bodily and mental pain in this world, will be alleviated when we take to the process of Krishna consciousness. So one of our best examples is, of course, Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj exemplifies this great compassion of the Vaishnavas and the understanding of what is the root cause of suffering and how that suffering can be eliminated. In the seventh canto, Prahlad says, "O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in your thoughts of your glories and activities." Now, why does it do that to me? In the middle of a quote? Okay. Anyway, does anyone know that verse? It's a very, very nice verse by Prahlad Maharaj. Okay, I'll be back here in a second. Or not. Okay. Okay, we're back online now. Anyway, thank you. The English translation was, my concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. Then later he says, my dear Lord Nrsingadev, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or to the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet. So these very wonderful prayers of Prahlad Maharaj exemplify this quality of compassion. That one understands that without taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, one cannot be happy in this material world. And therefore one is doomed to a life of suffering. And that is why he calls them mudhas. He's, you know, it's a very interesting because he says they are fools and rascals, they're mudha. And at the same time, he says he's absorbed in love for them. So in other words, the devotee has the understanding that people are suffering due to ignorance. And we're not afraid to just call ignorance what it is, that people are devoid of real knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada would speak very boldly and very strongly about, and especially against those who are misleading people into materialism, atheism, or impersonalism. But at the same time that one understands the suffering caused by ignorance, one remains compassionate towards the living entity, towards the one who is suffering. I was thinking, I've mentioned this many times, that, you know, Srila Prabhupada exhibited great compassion for all living entities. But he tended to sort of single out Mayavadis and material atheistic scientists. And he gave them a real hard time, didn't he? He spoke very strongly against the atheists and the materialists, the scientists, and Mayavadi philosophers. Why? Because they are the ones who their philosophies and their teachings were misleading others, and that misleading of others led to people staying within this material world and suffering. So in other words, it's not that the pure devotee is angry particularly at these people, but he's angry that they are misleading people because of his compassion. Because of his compassion for all living entities, understanding their suffering, then naturally a devotee is not very happy, you know, to those who are increasing the suffering of others. So we don't like to see that. We don't like to see false philosophies and propaganda. But at the same time, you know, it's like hate the sin but not the sinner. At the same time, one keeps full compassion, empathy, understanding, and love for all living entities, who are all part and parcels of Krishna, who are all originally devotees of Krishna, but are simply mistakenly identifying with the bodily conception of life, and they're under the illusion of so many false philosophies and false understandings. So it's sort of a simultaneous understanding that we have. We don't want to, you know, become... Well, there's another principle in counseling where they say that empathy does not mean sympathy. In other words, you may be empathic towards a person's suffering, doesn't mean that you agree with what they're doing. Sympathy sometimes means, oh, you poor thing, and you're right, and I feel so bad for you. No, our eyes are open. We understand suffering, we also understand the cause of suffering, and sometimes we understand the person's own activities and behavior, which are increasing their own suffering. So, you know, it's not sympathy, it's a question of compassion, which is how to help them change those activities, change those behaviors, ultimately change their consciousness in such a way that they will no longer suffer in this material world. So, as I said, we have these, our examples of our acharyas, and of course we have the living example of Srila Prabhupada. We're very, very fortunate. If we want to understand compassion, we don't have to go very far to find it. We can simply see in all of Srila Prabhupada's books, his lectures, his writings, and as we hear about his relationships with devotees and his preaching work and his mission, we understand fully what real compassion is, how Srila Prabhupada took such great risk, such great personal inconvenience to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. And that's another aspect of compassion, of spiritual compassion, that one may also take risks and inconveniences for the purpose of trying to help other living entities. And we see Prahlad Maharaj, again, the most wonderful example, that he was, when did his father actually start, you know, his atrocities against him, when he wanted to actually kill him? Wasn't it the point when he was actually starting to preach to the other children? And he was actually, when he began preaching Krishna consciousness, according to Hiranyakasipu, infecting the others, that's when Hiranyakasipu really stepped it up, right? That's when he wanted to actually get rid of him. So the Krishna conscious devotee is willing to accept this kind of risk, even up to the point of, you know, his own physical death of the body, you know, for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness and glorifying Krishna. So we see this in, and of course, in Prahlad Maharaj's, I believe it's his next incarnation as Vasudev Dutta, or at least Lord Chaitanya says he is Vasudev Dutta. We see probably the highest example of this. This is from Majjalila 15.160, beginning 15th chapter of Majjalila. My dear Lord, you incarnate, Vasudev Dutta says to Lord Chaitanya, my dear Lord, you incarnate just to deliver all conditioned souls. I now have one petition which I wish you would accept. My Lord, you are certainly able to do whatever you like, and you are indeed merciful. If you so desire, you can very easily do whatever you want. My Lord, my heart breaks to see the suffering of all the conditioned souls. Therefore, I request you to transfer the karma of their sinful lives upon my head. My dear Lord, let me suffer perpetually in a hellish condition, accepting all the sinful reactions of all living entities. Please finish their diseased material life. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard Vasudev Dutta's statement, his heart became very soft. Tears flowed from his eyes, and he began to tremble. In a faltering voice, he spoke as follows. Accepting Vasudev Dutta as a great devotee, Lord Chaitanya said, such a statement is not at all astonishing because you are the incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. It appears that Lord Krishna has bestowed complete mercy upon you. There is no doubt about it. Whatever a pure devotee wants from his master, Lord Krishna doubtlessly grants because he has no duty other than to fulfill the desire of his devotees. If you desire the deliverance of all living entities within the universe, then all of them can be delivered even without your undergoing the tribulations of sinful activities. So this also shows the wonderful reciprocation between Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and their devotees, Lord Chaitanya was so moved by this compassion of Vasudev Dutta that he glorified him and said, actually, you don't have to suffer. I know that you're willing to do so, but I have already delivered all of these living entities, you know. And he so much praised him as his example. So we can understand that this is the position of the Vaishnava. To feel this selfless sacrifice for the sake of all living entities. To have compassion. To try to deliver all of the suffering jiva souls from this material world. We know that as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, we know that as Srila Prabhupada's mission. And as followers of Srila Prabhupada, disciples or grand disciples, we know that is our mission. So sometimes, why don't we feel like this? Sometimes, this is a very, very lofty, very advanced feeling, and sometimes it doesn't come so naturally to us. We may know it theoretically, but we don't always feel it within our hearts or necessarily act on that way. So there are obstacles to the development of our own compassion. I just wanted to mention a couple things that I was thinking about. Why do I not feel compassion to living entities all the time? Why am I not willing to put myself at risk and, you know, preach to everybody I meet and try to somehow save the conditioned souls, as Srila Prabhupada did, and as Vasudev Dutta and Prahlad Maharaj did? Well, one thing, sometimes we don't have sufficient knowledge. And even if we have knowledge, that knowledge isn't always realized. And so we have to hear this. We have to hear the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we have to hear from Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master continually to understand that this is, you know, what is really the suffering in this material world and how it can be alleviated. So we have to be armed with knowledge. We have to be, and we have to be convinced. Our faith must be strong. And through the association of devotees and hearing and chanting, that faith becomes stronger. You know, so that we do have real faith that this Krishna conscious movement is the answer to all of life's problems. I think that requires a certain amount of faith and conviction, and we shouldn't ever get sidetracked and think, well, maybe there's some other answer if I change the philosophy, or if we water it down, if we, you know, present it in some way that people don't really know we're devotees, or we're not really chanting Hare Krishna or whatever, that somehow this is going to be successful. And this is my own unpaid political announcement here, I guess. But I really feel strongly that we do need to have faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada and the process that Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya gave us of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Because we find it works. We all became devotees from chanting Hare Krishna, from hearing the philosophy, you know, from association with saintly devotees. And if we can simply give the simple process to others with faith and conviction, it will work. And more devotees will come to Krishna consciousness. So we have to have faith, we have to have conviction, we also have to practice. You know, it's sometimes you have to, you know, like, what the quality of Prabhupada said, was it enthusiasm? When someone said, how do you become enthusiastic? And Prabhupada said, by being enthusiastic, right? In other words, you know, you have to exert yourself a little bit, be a little enthusiastic, and then the actual feeling of enthusiasm will come. So in the same way, if we practice compassion, we will begin to feel compassion. And how do we practice compassion? By giving Krishna consciousness to others, by preaching Krishna consciousness. That's the real compassion. So when we're doing those activities, Krishna within the heart is the super soul, gives us more and more realization, more and more enlivenment, and also the heart becomes purified. Because compassion is a natural quality of the soul. We don't have to figure it out what it is and how to get it. We just simply have to uncover that as part of our natural spiritual position. The devotee is naturally compassionate, and as we make advancement in Krishna consciousness, that compassion will grow more and more. Which brings us to the point of that we do need to become spiritually advanced. We can see that the most spiritually advanced devotees are the ones who have the most compassion. The Prahlad Maharajas, the Srila Prabhupadas, they exemplify compassion because they are the ones who are the most dedicated to the service of Krishna, who are the most realized about their relationship and their loving relationship with Krishna. So advancement means that we have to become free of material desires. As we become advanced, our heart becomes soft. And the heart softens as we develop our own love for Krishna. And so naturally, with that softened heart, compassion for other living entities will come about. If we're understanding our loving relationship with Krishna and how much we are loved by Krishna and by our spiritual master, then naturally the change of heart comes about, the softening of heart is there, and we want to also be compassionate to others. One thing that also prevents that happening is we become overly absorbed in our own problems and our own issues. If we are self-absorbed, it is hard to be compassionate to others, isn't it? If I'm thinking about, I have so many problems, and this is happening to me, and why is Krishna doing this, and why is this, and this isn't fair, and why are they treating me like, you know, then it's like, where's our compassion for others? It's stifled, you know, because we become absorbed in basically, I mean, I hate to say our own sense gratification, but, you know, we become absorbed in, you know, thoughts of ourselves and our own position. And of course, sometimes we do need to take care of things. I mean, sometimes we do need to take care of our needs. So there's nothing wrong with that. But we don't make that prominent. It's not that I'm always taking care of my needs all the time. I mean, that's what a non-devotee does, right? That's the materialist, is always taking care of their needs, their senses. You know, what do I want? What do I need? How can I gain more and more for myself? The mentality of a devotee is almost the opposite. How do I serve others? How do I serve Krishna? How do I serve Guru? How do I serve Srila Prabhupada? And how do I serve the Vaishnavas, the devotees? So that mood of service, which we can cultivate, helps us develop true compassion. So the service attitude is not something what is natural, because it is our constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna, but it's unnatural in the sense that we have been in this material world so long that we have practically forgotten our real role as servant. So service attitude we talk about a lot is definitely something that can be cultivated and can grow, and we can experience more and more as we simply do it. So the process of hearing and chanting, the process of service and serving the devotees works. The more that we serve devotees, the more that we will make advancement and the more that we will feel compassion towards others. And the spontaneous desire to want to be able to give Krishna consciousness to others will develop more and more if we simply continue in this process, following the orders of the spiritual master and association devotees. Okay, that's probably enough. We're out of time. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any comments, questions, thoughts, Madan Mahaprabhu?
I lost the thread on... it's Narada Muni talking to Madigriva and Nala Kovera.
Yeah.
And they're, what's the pinprick relating to with them? Because they were just dancing and playing, and what were they experiencing?
Right. In other words, Narada Muni has basically been saying the last couple of verses that they've lost their perspective. They're self-absorbed, and they can't understand, you know, their own situation. They can't understand the situation of others. So he's saying that by cursing them, then they will be in a position where they're going to be able to kind of come to their senses and have a realization. In other words, you know, they've been... Who called them? Who was it? Someone was called them. They were like playboys or something. Somebody mentioned that in class a couple of days ago. In other words, they're born in this situation, sons of Kovera, the richest demigod in the universe. So they have no, they don't, that's their life. And to give them this perspective, to give them compassion, to give them better spiritual understanding, he's cursing them. So they can experience their life from the other side. You know, it's, okay, stand as a tree for a few thousand years, and then maybe you have a little more appreciation. And so then Narada Muni, I think, is expanding that, you know, as he does, philosophically, you know, expanding the principle out to the idea of empathy and compassion. Really, all living entities. Yeah, that's my understanding. Yeah, it is interesting how we start with this pastime and we end up with all these different philosophical principles. And of course, that's very typical of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There might be a pastime that even if doesn't seem like so much is happening, but yet we have opportunities are given for all the great saints and acharyas to be able to preach Krishna consciousness within these pastimes. Any other questions, thoughts? Yes, Prabhu.
You were talking about compassion for suffering entities and anger for scientists or Mayavadis for for misleading people.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, would you not also feel compassion for them because would they not be misled as well?
Should you also feel sympathy for those who are misleading others? Yes, of course. The devotee feels sympathy for all living entities, and or empathy and compassion for all living entities. There's also the principle that if one is preaching Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada explained that we act on the Majjhima platform. In other words, the Uttama Adhikari, the pure devotee, has equal vision to everyone, right? Everyone is ultimately a pure devotee. Everyone's a devotee of Krishna and would see everyone equally. But for the purpose of preaching, we make distinctions. And it's described that the Majjhima makes four distinctions. He sees the personality of guided Krishna. He sees the devotees of Krishna. He sees those who are more or less misled or the innocent people, and those who are antagonistic or atheistic or demoniac. So you act they act differently. In other words, one displays compassion and preaches to those who are innocent, and to those who are not, who are antagonistic, it's said that one simply avoids them. You know, so depending upon our particular ability and our spiritual advancement and our preaching capacity, we might be able to take on people who are more towards that side. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada did. There's a couple conversations that are just incredible where people were espousing like Mayavadi philosophy, and Srila Prabhupada actually defeated them, and they surrendered, and they actually became devotees. You know, so yes, if one has the ability and the capacity and the spiritual shakti to do that, yes, give our compassion to everyone. And it's a very, very good point. I appreciate that. It's not that we neglect anybody. But at the same time, sometimes you have to pick your battles according to your capacity. And if somebody is more innocent or more willing to hear, better to spend their time with them. Okay. Trivikram Prabhu?
Haribol, we find that some religionists, they commit so many abominable activities, especially like slaughtering animals mercilessly. But yet they defend that heinous act by saying God ordered them to do that. Hmm. You know, I mean, especially we know like Christians, you know, from the Bible and even the Muslims. So how do you convince such personalities? I mean, it's... Hmm.
Yeah, well, I guess the comment was that on religious grounds, people can perform all sorts of abominable activities and think that that is pleasing God. Well, yeah, people think so many things and have so many illusions. And, you know, Prabhupada once said even, you know, or it's described that even like Krishna gives the arguments to the atheists. In other words, everything is coming from Krishna, all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So, yeah, if somebody is determined to have a particular position, then, yeah, they'll justify it in so many ways. But I think they'll have a hard time justifying those positions according to bona fide Shastra or scripture. Yeah. Okay, she's probably in class. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.